Hi, everyone. I'm Brené Brown, and I'd love to tell you about my podcast, Dare to Lead. Innovation, creativity, building a better, more just world, all of these things require absolutely courageous leadership, especially given the complexity and chaos of the world right now. The Dare to Lead podcast is a collection of conversations with change catalysts, culture shifters, some troublemakers, folks who are really daring to create and change the world. I hope you join us.
Did you tell me it was my idea?
No.
You did not. Okay.
It didn't come up. You played an integral role in the creation of the idea.
Wow. No, I mean, it was my idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's pretty tough to write a sentence.
That's like saying that two parents play an integral role in the birth of their children. It's like, yes, but I mean...
Okay, I'll agree. I was the mother who birthed the child, whereas you were the father that injected sperm into my womb.
You were at best the midwife that observed the birth.
And then had to breastfeed the baby.
And had to nurse it back from the birth of death.
It was a teething child.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Christopher Plant, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Ross Frostig, and I know the best game of the week.
Chris, you sounded like
Did you hear that? I was trying to decide, am I going to do a Griffin impression? And then almost the second I started, I said, no, I'm not going to do that.
I don't know. That sounded pretty much like Griffin.
Except for when I said my name.
Yeah.
Should I try again?
Yeah, try again.
Hey, my name's Griffin McElroy, and I live in Austin. Burritos!
I never knew that my brother was Poochie from Itchy and Scratchy.
Goodbye, I'm going to my planet now.
Yeah, Griffin's out super sick. I'm barely alive, but I wanted to come tell you guys about the hottest, latest video games as we do every week here on The Besties. As we look at the new games and talk about them, just kind of like most podcasts.
From time to time, yes. We do that.
Like most video games. I want to start off talking about Proteus, a new indie bonbon from two guys who made it.
I have a lot of thoughts about this game.
No, you don't. You didn't play it. Chris Plant, give us the skinny. On Proteus.
Okay. Wow, there's like a giant helicopter that is flying over our apartment right now, and I feel like this is the end. In a second. Okay, it's gone. And now I can tell you about Proteus. It was the video game police. Because many of the video game people don't think this is actually a video game. So that's something to consider going in. So in Proteus, you are in a bright, colorful, three-dimensional island. You walk around, and then the game ends.
Okay.
Well, so it turns out I actually did play it.
That does sound like a fair explanation.
That is the game.
The entire game. But it's very pretty, this island, and it's responsive in some ways. Like, there are frogs that you can chase, and there are fireflies. And there are kind of little tricks to making other things happen. Like, I'll spoil just one, because there isn't a lot, so I don't want to spoil the whole game. But there are kind of like religious-looking stones, and if you approach them at, I think, the nighttime, that's how it worked for me, like a storm happens and this kind of colorful religious event occurs. But everything's very slight. And very soft and very beautiful, and then it just ends.
So it's essentially like you were dropped into like a Minecraft server, and you just sort of wandered around for a while, and every once in a while there'd be like interactive moments.
interactive is maybe the wrong... I guess interactive is technically
interactive
accurate.
In the sense that you are walking towards them, but there's nothing else you can do.
Yeah, there is no action you can take. I described it on Twitter as what it's like being an Octorok waiting for Link to come kill you.
Like, it's pretty funny.
That. Thank you. I'm a professional. I think the in Proteus, you really don't... I mean, there's nothing you solve, nothing you sort of, like, do. There's not an action that you have to do. It's simply the passage of time. And you're not really interacting with the environment in any way other than observing it. Observing things can change them. I think the problem with Proteus, and it is not endemic to Proteus, I think it is fine for what it sets out to be, and I think it achieves the things that it sets out to achieve. But it's not a game, and I think that it really betrays sort of a lack of how little vocabulary we really have with dealing with interactive electronic things, because I don't think it is a game. Like, I think for something to qualify as a game, there have to be objectives, there has to be a fail state. And Proteus has neither of these things. It is an interactive work of art, and I think that that's great. I think it's and you know, some people enjoy it, some people won't. That's fine, but I think putting that label of game on it is problematic.
I feel like you putting a game in that sort of box is a little worrying. I guess we all define games differently, but I don't know that it needs to necessarily have... I feel like someone creating a world and letting you, like, explore that world wherever you want, that sounds like a game to me. I get you can't really do anything apart from, like, look around and... But
I guess I don't
I'm really torn between both of those arguments. Because on one hand, I think with a video game, specifically just video games, when we say games, I kind of agree with Frostick that, you know, it's a virtual space and you can do things in it, even if those things don't have, like, a very clear cause and effect. But then if you think about just the history of games, you know, thousands and thousands of years, much broader than video games, this idea of just walking around isn't a game. On that side, Justin's right. You know, you do need some rules or objectives or fail states. Like, if you walked around a theme park, that's not a game.
You know? It's funny you said that, Chris. When you, when I was a kid, when you go into the World of Imagination in Epcot,
yes,
and this is in Disney World. If you've only been to Disneyland, you won't grok this as much. But there's a World of Imagination in Epcot, and at the end of it, you're in this sort of, I guess, playground, for lack of a better term, and you. You can, like, jump on tiles, and that makes them create certain noises, and you can chase lights around, and you can interact with those, and there's, like, you know, funny cameras that distort your image, and
it's like a science museum.
Yeah, exactly.
But except there's no actual science going on.
No science, no objective.
No learning.
There's no learning, exactly. And to me, I don't think that it makes sense to delineate between that and a... you know, I don't think that making that experience completely digital would make that a game.
I think when you talk about words, though, I love that we're going down this road.
Yeah, I mean, I'd hesitate to even do
no,
it.
No, I think
why not? I mean, I think it's
I think worthwhile. I find it as interesting as the our games art conversation, which is to say, like, maybe no one really knows.
No, I think this is a lot more important than that, because art... it's anything. I think what's interesting here is you have schools or all these arguments are around the word game, and I don't think that's the right word. I think play is something closer to it. Like you said, you know, when you went to Epcot as a kid and you went into this playground, and I think specifically when you say you weren't learning things, I don't think that's entirely true. I think that's what games are, and even experiences like this are. Play is a safe place to learn. You're, you know, That's what play is. You're learning certain experiences. You're learning how to play games. You're learning how to do things in a safe venue. And I think in that way, it falls under that. And that's super, super heady. In terms of looking at this, that's why I don't think it's like just an art piece. I think it is a playful experience. I think it's something where you're walking around this world and learning what it is. Exactly like what's happening at Epcot.
The truth of the matter is probably somewhere between art and game. I mean,
Gart.
It's Gart! It's totally Gart!
Gart. Hey, Gart.
No, the only reason I make that, for me at least, this isn't a completely, this isn't just semantics, because I think the lens by which we evaluate games often is it fun? And of course, when we say fun, a lot of times what we're referring to, at least if you buy into like Rafe Koster's take on it, is the experience of learning. You know, the idea that you learn a system and you can apply that knowledge and that's fun and satisfying. Proteus is not fun, at least for me. It was not fun in that regard.
You know what? I've been thinking of trying to come up with like a game that this reminds me of, and it sounds to me exactly like what was the one where you're reading letters on that island and you're just like, no. Came out like a year ago. They did like a remake of it. It was a mod. Oh, Esther's something or other.
Oh, Dear Esther.
Sounds a lot like Dear Esther.
Even less, much less.
There's no fail state in Dear Esther. You can't lose.
But
you can't die.
There's not even like letters or anything in this. There's no story or anything. I mean, there's the passage of time, which I guess.
Yeah.
Like
so the one thing that I want to know, and I don't want you to go into this because obviously it's a big part of the game, but I do sort of. I just want to have some indication. A lot of people have talked about the ending, that there's an ending to Proteus.
Yes.
Like, people said it's 45 minutes long or whatever. What does that even mean, if you're not doing anything?
Time.
Is it just, like, watching the sun go across the sky?
Sure, something like that. I mean, that's probably, it's the one thing that happens, so I'm not going to say what it is.
Okay.
But yes, there's something, it's a passage of time, and that comes to an end.
You guys sure you didn't just, like miss the chest? Like, there's probably a chest around there somewhere. Fine.
Did you find the sword? Because if you don't find the sword, you
it's
can't
dangerous
kill
to go
him.
Alone.
Take this.
Yeah,
it's boring to go
honestly,
alone.
I actually liked Proteus a lot, probably more than Justin. But the way I played it was loading in at like, I don't know, like 5:30 in the morning on a Sunday, and kind of being dazed and just not knowing how long it would take, not knowing almost anything about it. And it was just like the music just kind of washed over me, and the experience happened, and 45 minutes passed, and it felt very, I don't know, I'm not zen, but kind of like meditative. Like I didn't really, I wasn't looking for it to be anything more, I guess, and it just happened, and I enjoyed it. But I think
so,
the
like,
problem is
if you're on lewds, essentially, it's the perfect game.
Yeah, I think that's perfect. Is if you just want to listen to the music and like. Check out the scenery and kind of figure out this space because that's the other important thing. The island that you're on is different every time. It generates itself. So
is it that different though?
Oh yeah, I played through it about I guess 1.5 times because I didn't need to finish it again.
And is it just like how different is it?
I mean, totally different. I mean, it has all the same key things? There are like. I don't know, probably 5 or 6 things that are in each one. There's a graveyard, there's these religious stones, there's a mountain, but where everything is different.
So not that different.
I mean, sure.
I suspect my problems with it probably stem from the fact that I don't, and I've been pretty clear about this, I don't particularly enjoy this aesthetic. It's not, the retro aesthetic is not something that I enjoy, and I think this is even less detailed than a lot of games that would consider themselves to be retro, very much has sort of an Atari 2600 vibe. That may be overstating the point of it, but it is very – the graphics are very simple.
It is a first-person shooter, though. I mean, first-person game.
Yes,
right.
It's a first-person game. But
it's 3D, so that was probably
good,
beyond
– because it does kind of look like – when it's flat, it looks like a 2D image, and it looks kind of like an Atari cover.
Yeah. Like,
Yeah.
Like with crazy rainbows and shit.
Yes, with crazy rainbows. And stripes and red balloons. So yeah, I mean, that's that game. I don't know how much more we want to go down any semantic rabbit holes, or if you want
to stay at halftime. That stuff I find horrifying.
The weird thing about it, semantics aside, the interesting thing about it is I think fun, whatever fun is, while not universal, is more universal than aesthetic appreciation. And I think that it is much easier for me to recommend a game that I find fun to someone else who likes games. I think it's a lot easier for me to recommend that to somebody as opposed to something like this where, I mean, if that aesthetic appeals to you, if the idea of being in this world would appeal to you, then I think that, you know, it's an easy sale because it's you're really going to enjoy your time there. And if you are unlike me in the fact that you can, like, relax and not feel like you have to be doing something.
I think that's a good point. Just because I think fun is, like, weirdly coded into our shared DNA. Like, Tetris, just the idea of, like, ordering things is, like, fun for everyone. Or just pressing jump seems to be fun for everyone in a video game for whatever reason. That physics things triggers some, you know, opiate in our heads.
Right.
While you're right, you know, we see things visually every day, so we do develop kind of, you know, I guess biases towards certain aesthetics. This is a really nerdy version.
No, but I mean, seriously, the one thing that I keep coming back to is when we're talking about this.
You got us. Good one.
That was a segue fart.
That's good. That's good.
Russ Freshnick's classic segue fart.
So how about you, Russ? What interesting things do you have to tell us?
I had a fight with a woman at Uniqlo the other day.
You fought a woman?
At where?
Well, not a physical fight. It was more of a battle of words.
A Japanese t-shirt shop?
No, they sell more than t-shirts. It's casual fashion, I would say.
Where was this?
It was in Herald Square, 34th Street.
Okay.
And they had signs everywhere announcing that there's some sort of pants deal going on where if you buy a certain number of pants...
Mm-hmm. Some sort of pants deal.
You get a good amount of money off. And this is what the pants deal... This is how it read. The pants deal read, if you buy two pairs of pants, you get $10 off. If you buy three pairs of pants, you get an additional $5 off each pair. Now, what does that sound like to you? Sounds like to me.
I got some scratch paper and a pen.
$15 off if you buy three pairs each. So $45 off.
Exactly. 100% that. That's what I thought too, is that you get $15 off each pair. That's a great deal, especially since they're like jeans are like $45 or whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, I made this argument and she's like, well, we've been having a lot of people coming in and having that same issue. And I'm like, right, because that's what the sign says. It doesn't say... So she was claiming, oh, no, that just means $5 off each pair. Anyway, it wasn't really...
That doesn't make any sense, though, because, like, why would you make the distinction of three pairs?
I know. So I went online after I got home, and the website had actually changed the language of it because clearly enough people, probably Jews like me, let's be honest, have complained about the fact that they're kind of scamming us with the language of their sale.
The old bait and switch.
But yeah, it didn't come to, I'm pretty level-headed and reasonable when it comes to that stuff. And I realize she has no actual control over the situation, but it's the sort of thing where it's like, you admit that, you know, the sign is misleading. Just throw me a bone or something. Like, come on. Like a little bit of discount, a little HJ in the back room. I mean, whatever.
Something.
The jeans are already so cheap.
I know. So I want them cheaper than they actually are. It's also, I go there a lot because my body is the shape of a Asian man.
You got that Asian man shape.
It's very svelte. Anyway, that was my experience. If you guys want to talk about something else that doesn't involve...
I've had a slow week. I've been laid up sick. It is, guys, It is hard to get sympathy when your wife is a doctor.
Yeah.
It is hard.
Yeah.
I'd been sick all day, and I had been, like, at my most pitiful. Like, I was fully, fully pitiful. I was laid up in bed, you know, watching Ripper Street or something on TV, like, drinking tea, looking sad.
Is there, like, a chart on front of your bed when you get sick? And then she walks in and, like, looks at it absentmindedly and,
like,
then walks out?
No, she, like, ignores me. And then continues talking to me as if I were healthy. Oh. She doesn't put her hand on my head. She doesn't put a thermometer in my mouth.
So
fucking nothing.
Literally no bedside manner.
Like, no, like, she uses it all up on strangers. And then she comes home to heal someone she actually likes. And there's, like, nada.
But have you seen her at work, like, working?
No, not yet.
So
I mean,
you don't actually
times.
Know, right?
Maybe.
She could be Dr. House there. Very
Maybe
gruff.
She's House. Maybe she has interns go talk to the sick old ladies or something.
Right. And then when they're about to die, she bursts in the room and is like, I have an idea. And then she experiments on them because she's a rogue doctor addicted to pain pills.
She does tell me I don't have lupus a lot.
Yeah.
Which should have been a tip-off.
That is a warning sign. I'm deeply concerned.
Hey, I want to talk about another game.
Yeah, let's
Me too.
I just finished.
Whoa.
I solved, if you will, Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
You completed it.
I completed this
game. You sat through every cutscene there was.
Yeah.
How long did that take you?
Well, my final playtime on Metal Gear Rising Revengeance was 5.5 hours.
Does that include cutscenes?
Yeah.
How many
Seriously?
Hours of cutscenes were there?
Guys, 5.5 hours. That was my final playtime.
I don't
maybe
think
that doesn't include
cutscenes.
Maybe that doesn't include restarts. But
Did
when
I tell
got
you about the preview event, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but it's
oh, tell really, me about it. No, tell me.
So before the VGAs, there was a big preview event for this game, right? And I was at the VGAs talking to a few people about it, and they're like, oh, yeah, Konami just, you know, let us play for, like, half the day. And I was like, oh, yeah, so you got, you know, kind of a start on it? And they're like, well, the weirdest thing happened. We all beat the game. And I was like, what do you mean? And, like, we all beat the entire game while we were trying to preview it.
What were they thinking?
So let's back up a little bit. Let's pull the lid. That's sort of okay. Like a before the title card. And now the title card
lost.
Has popped up. Yeah, right. And now we're into the meat of it. Metal Gear Rising Revengeance is an action game, not stealth tactical stealth espionage or whatever the hell.
Spy Ninja.
Solid is. It is a full on total action game in the style of, you know, your Devil May Cries or what have yous. It's built around Raiden, who is Metal Gear Solid's little brother. I don't know the backstory very well. And you're riding is taking on a company of PMCs who want to...
What does PMC stand for?
Private military contractors?
So, yeah, probably.
Or professional military contractors?
I don't know. I think it's
military contractors. Anyway, private military contractors. Yeah, that sounds right. Anyway, they want to make a lot more war, and he doesn't want that to happen, and there's something about... They're enslaving kids to be cyborg ninjas or something. I don't know. It's not
like
you know, Metal Gear. It's Metal Gear. So the game is built primarily around Raiden's sword, which is interesting because it is so different from what you've seen in other Metal Gear games, where I think obviously guns are the preferred method of dispatching enemies. There's no
or
guns.
Knives.
There. Knives. Yeah. This is swords, though. It's different.
Or rations.
Or rations. You do use rations to kill a lot of enemies. There's your combos, which, you know, everybody likes those. XXX, and then you kill a guy. You can put a sub weapon on Y, which can be like big swords or size or something like a bow staff. And, you know, all the different Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle weapons are represented here except for nunchuku.
So it's essentially X is like quick attack, Y is like long attack.
Sort of. Actually, the sub-weapons are very different. Not the sub-weapons. That's a whole other thing. The size, for example, can help drag you towards an enemy. mm-hmm. and bring you in close to them while the bow staff covers, or it's not a bow staff, it's like a big long, it's a pole arm basically, helps you cover a larger area with your attacks. So it's kind of, you can switch on the fly, not on the fly really, you have to go into a sub menu, but you know, you can switch mid level.
I feel like few games personify sub menu better than Metal Gear games.
Yeah, there's some. So you can also use sub weapons, which can be everything from grenade launchers to actual grenades to pictures that like distract enemies to cardboard boxes.
Can you
hide in a la every other Metal Gear game, which can be kind of an annoying break in the action because they're all pretty specific. I mean, there's very rare situations where where both a grenade and a rocket launcher would be appropriate. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of switching in between those if you're going to use them. But the interesting thing is that in addition to all these combos and regular weapons, you have what's called blade mode, which is triggered by holding in the left trigger. And basically what that does is it slows time and allows you to slice exactly where you want to. So, that's everything from you can cut off an enemy's head.
Aww.
You can slice off their legs. For larger machines, you can slice off, specific guns to cripple them before you can actually destroy the machine itself.
Yeah.
As you might expect, by cutting people or machines up stylishly, you get BP, which is basically the currency of the game, which you use
battle points.
You use it to upgrade your skills and what have you.
Yeah. So I've been playing a little bit dumb because I actually played the game. But I've been asking you questions to sort of inform the reader, as it were.
The listener.
Unlike the listener, as it were. I'm like that girl in Inception that is like, how did the dreams machine work? Anyway, so the blade mode thing is what I liked most about this game. I thought it felt really unique and like super, super satisfying. Because you just sort of like, I can't remember the last game where you felt like you had that much control over like manipulating a body and like effing it up.
Right.
Like most games you like might shoot a leg off or like an arm or a head or whatever. But here you're like the precise angle that you want to slice this guy's torso in, you can do that. And there's this whole like mini game element where after you slice someone, you can like grab this thing out of the air and crush it, and it like gives you bonus points. That I think that whole like slicing element is definitely the most clever original thing about this game.
Uh-huh.
And I liked it a lot.
Whatever happened to that idea? That felt like after Soldier Fortune. Not that I liked the violence of it, but the idea of kind of dismantling something.
Oh, we just played Army of Two like a week ago.
Yeah, but as it's coming to attack you, and it actually like serving the purpose of the game.
Dead Space
1 did that for a while, but Dead Space 3, it felt like you shot it and it just kept coming at you just as fast as it did before. And the legs wouldn't really come after unless you like got him with like 5 or 6 shots.
And it surprisingly keeps from being too, I mean, it doesn't feel as ghoulish as it could, mainly because the guys you're fighting are all cyborgs.
Right.
So it's mainly like you're seeing circuitry and not as much on the blood and guts end.
Which is in keeping with the series. Like, the series has never been very violent.
It is, it's violent, but it's just not, like, gory.
It's like muted violence.
Yeah.
It's like PG-13 violence.
So, I really enjoyed playing it. And I think that I enjoyed the moment-to-moment experience of playing Metal Gear Rising more than I liked the moment-to-moment experience of playing Metal Gear Solid games, largely because when stealth went bad, and like it is sort of designed to go bad in this game, there are not a lot of scenarios that you can just stealth your way through. If you sneak up behind an enemy, you tap B, you can do a stealth kill. You can also do those from above, but like it is not intended for you to. As an example, you have a vision mode where you can see where enemies are, but the moment you attack or even run, you deactivate that mode.
Mm-hmm.
Which actually is my first problem with the game, is that it explains nothing.
Yeah. It explains none of that.
None of the tools or anything.
That was I love Evan Narcisse at Kotaku is a close friend, but his review, which was glowing, was followed, I think, maybe 2 hours later by, so if you're going to play this game, here are the things you have to do in the first 2 hours to get past that part. Because the game won't tell you how to get past certain enemies that you just would bat your head against the wall.
But it is weirdly satisfying when you figure it out. There's like a little puzzly element to like taking on certain enemies.
These things don't sound puzzly. It just sounds like, oh, so that's how I use the parry system.
Oh yeah, the parry system is totally unexplained.
Yeah, the parry system is not explained. The enhanced reality vision is not explained. Lots of essential things are not explained. You need to go through all the VR missions. You need to go into the help section to see how you do moves, and you need to probably get on the internet and look at the pieces you're referring to, because it really is they do not tell you a lot. But once you get the hang of it, I really like the process of playing the game a lot. It has some severe pacing issues, which I think tie into the time. The back half of the game is basically all boss fights. I mean, you sometimes there's a short little run up where you're killing a few guys, but early on in the game it has a really nice flow of, you know, go through the level, and then at the end there's a massive boss which has its own strategy to destroying, which is only important because you get basically a gel that can refill your life, and you get those through the process of playing the level. You know, you'll find them just like anything else. But when they put back-to-back-to-back-to-back boss fights on you, you don't have an opportunity to get that gel.
Well, you just don't know, like, when that's going to, like, how, if you're preserving those, like, resources, you don't know how many you're supposed to preserve if they're just constantly throwing boss fights at you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't know if, like, oh, God, I've used too many of these to get through the rest of the game because I, you know, and you know, you have 100% life energy or whatever, and there are attacks later on in the game that can take a quarter to a half of your life in one hit. So it can get, like, really, really hard late, and not through any fault of your own. It just becomes, like, hugely frustrating. And I don't know. And there's like several problems like that. Plus, like, the length, it seems really short. It feels like a game somebody just wanted to get finished.
Well, I mean, that's what it was, though, right?
Well, not only that, we should note that it's a platinum game, and platinum games tend to be pretty short.
Yeah. But it wasn't always a platinum game, right?
That's true.
Yeah, but they throw away, like, everything. I thought that was, like, the whole thing, that they were like, yeah, we made all these things, and Platinum was like, we don't really want them.
Yeah, I think that's probably what happened. I think I'd rather, like, honestly, I felt like Metal Gear Solid 4, like, hugely overstayed its welcome. Like, I was so ready to be done with that game when it ended. So I'd rather it be almost shorter than longer, although 5.5 hours is pretty damn short, especially for a $60 price tag.
I'm actually agree. It's very rare that I say I wish the game had been longer, because I think a lot of time that's a good thing, right? Because they can leave you wanting more. That's cool.
Yeah.
But I think Metal Gear Rising is one of those games that fails, that succeeds as a game as it while it fails as a product. Because it is fun to play. I mean, the systems and everything they built in such a way that it's a fun, rewarding, challenging experience, well balanced, etc. But just as a product, it's not good. It's too short. It doesn't explain enough to you. The VR missions, you can go play VR missions if you want. I did not find them particularly enjoyable. There's a long loading sequence before each one. So if you, like, fail it and start it again, you're going to wait through, I think, 15 seconds or so of loading time before you get a shot. We're talking about some of these that are, like, insta-fail stealth things. So I wasn't crazy about that. But I don't know. I enjoyed playing it. I just think if you, and I, again, I'm never this guy. I'm never the guy who's like, add more length. But like, I think if you paid $60 for this game, you would feel like you did not get your money's worth personally.
Yeah. Well, that's,
And I don't know what $60 is worth to you. It is fun. It is fun to play. Yeah. I don't understand why the story in these games always has to be so bad. There is actually like, they're getting close to an interesting point with some of it. The guy doing the voice of Raiden is really terrible, and it very much sounds like a guy who's pretending to be tough the whole time, and I don't know why he couldn't just I mean, it's always like this. Hey, I mean, let's go get a hamburger after this. Like, I don't know why he can't just
yeah,
be
but that's
dude.
Metal Gear, right? Like,
are those games, are they voice-directed in America, or are they voice-directed in Japan?
No, so, like,
they
I'm don't pretty even sure know, it's like, done like, in Japan.
Like, yeah, they're guessing all Americans are yelling.
I'm sure there's someone, like a fluent English speaker in the audience while they're recording these things in the crowd.
It's not even the, I mean, it's not even the, you know, it's not even the text so much as, although at one point.
Delivery.
It's the delivery, right? Although at one point, Raiden does deliver the line. I don't remember exactly what it is. He says something to the extent of, nothing that's on the scale of 9/11 can be good. It's like, well. Yeah.
Yeah, but what if it's like a parade on the scale of 9/11?
Yeah, like as bad as that was, imagine a parade that is as good as that.
Yeah.
Was bad. I mean, they sum it up and one of the bad guys at another point is like, it'll be just like the good old days right after 9/11. Like, okay. I mean, you're still a Metal Gear game. Maybe you should just try to keep it in check a little bit. But that stuff was fun, and I really do like the swordplay stuff is neat, and it's a cool way of like connecting you to the idea of using a sword as opposed to any other weapon. Because in a lot of third person action games that have melee combat, I mean, it wouldn't matter what weapon you're using, right? Like a sword is the same as the blades in God of War and, you know, or Batman's punches or whatever, you know, it wouldn't really matter. But it does feel like you're using a sword in this game. Didn't it at one point have Kinect functionality? Am I like...
That's... Yeah, I don't know if that's misremembering true, but that? It feels like no. It was designed during the peak of Kinect Move Wii. You know, the
yeah,
idea.
It just wouldn't... there's no fathomable way it could possibly work apart from, like, just having an entire game where you stand in front of a screen, essentially Fruit Ninja. But if it was Fruit Ninja, yeah, it would work.
This is the perfect type of supplementary material, you know? Like,
yeah,
play the game with a controller, and then when it's time to, like, smash, swipe your hand around and grab the heart and crush it. Like,
yeah, but you have to, like, stand up.
No, you can sit.
No, it really doesn't work. Kinect is the worst.
It's a huge... The cool thing about the swordplay, and it's cool, but it's also, I don't know if it'll be for everybody's bag, is that it is kind of tricky. So you slow down time to almost a crawl, but you're still losing energy, so you don't have an infinite amount of blade mode. You, with the right thumbstick, change the angle at which you're going to make a cut. So by rotating the thumbstick, you rotate the angle you're going to make a cut at. And by moving the left thumbstick, you change your orientation, which is like a lot for your brain to process.
It's not intuitive, but it's. Well, I think you get a handle on how it works.
That's kind of, yeah. I mean, there's room to like become really good at it.
Yeah.
You know, there's room, there's reward for practice with it. And if you cut as you're about to kill an enemy, you can cut in a certain location and be able to pull out his, energy.
Spine.
And crush it in your hand, and that refills your life and your energy. So that there is a gameplay benefit to bisecting dudes.
Yeah. Gross. Yeah, it's okay. Again, I mean, it's just, I think the $60 thing is a lot to ask for. It seems like a really good, like if it was like a, I don't know, in a couple of years, I'm sure it'll be down. Probably in like 4 months, it'll probably be down to like $20. And at that point, I think it's totally worth it. Right now, I don't know.
It depends. It as I always tell people when they ask me if a game is worth a certain amount of money,
I don't know what that money is worth to you. So that is a
possible. If you ride to work in a yacht made of diamonds, you right. probably can spring for the $60.
And somebody can play the annoying parts and explain to you what the game is not explaining.
Yeah. Right. Then I think you could really get a kick out of it and enjoy it.
Great.
Yeah.
Guys, we did it. We did it this week. It was barely. Hard without Griffin. I mean, we need that man.
Yeah, we need him back. I need him.
I'm worried about him.
What are you guys gonna? What are we gonna like? What's on tap next week? What are we gonna
Okay, so here's the deal about next week, and it's a little complicated.
All right, hit me.
Chris Plant, who you might know, is another member of this podcast.
He plays Chris Plant.
Is traveling to Japan, home of Metal Gear Solid Revengeance.
Why are you doing that? Why is this the first time hearing about this?
Wait, is it really?
Yes.
That's amazing. That
seems likely.
Awesome.
So yeah, he's going to Japan to do some stuff. And so I don't know when that leaves. We might have to record without him.
I think next week, yeah. And then the week
And with that in mind, there's only one game that I want to play next week because I already played it and it's great. Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
Tomb Raider.
Definitely have to get into Tomb Raider.
Is there something else that we can call to?
I'm trying to think of what else comes
out. Check out the old Electronics Boutique.
If it's out, I think you guys should play Fishing. Extreme.
Oh no, I know when it's coming out, and it's not next week.
Never mind. So
that's a no. That's a passer. Who plays Super Crate Box again? No.
Yeah, this website's not super helpful for telling me what games are coming out soon. Oh, when's Gears of War coming out? Is that soon? No. This is great radio, I'm sure, is us looking at
You know what I think you guys
list.
Should do? I think it's a Tomb Raider episode. You can talk about your history with Lara. You can...
Tomb Raider?
So
all the fun
about.
We had together.
It's a big game.
Maybe Griffin's playing something else that
you know
we don't know about.
We'll figure it all out. We'll let you.
Maybe Griffin's got an inside line on a cool new game.
On the Hot Scoops.
Okay, basically, like, I don't know what else comes out next week. That's where I'm
this
at.
This is what
you
need Griffin
for. Oh, doesn't SimCity come out next week?
Oh, yeah. That you should do that game. I'm like, oh,
it's
man. It's
sort of a big
I'm
game.
I can't talk about that.
Yeah, I want to cover SimCity, I think.
Okay.
As well as Tomb Raider.
Do it without me, guys.
That's a big week.
SimCity and Tomb Raider is a big week. And, I mean... That's Amazing Spider-Man Ultimate Edition, so that's coming out, too.
Yeah.
Week after that is God of War 3 and StarCraft 3, or sorry, StarCraft 2, too.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like a God of War week for me. Yeah, okay, so let's do Tomb Raider and SimCity next week. Chris Plant will hopefully be traveling safely to many, many maid cafes and other extravagances in Japan.
Not on the company doll, I hope.
Only on the company doll.
Only on the company doll. Hey, thank you guys so much for listening. Make sure you visit us at polygon.com. Follow us at Polygon, YouTube / Polygon, Facebook / Polygon, polygon.com.tumblr.com. You know, all that stuff. Come check us out. Subscribe to our show. Rate us on iTunes. And make sure to join us again next Friday for the besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends play the world's best games?